Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. Yes, this program also repeats on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. And this week, to coincide somewhat with a show at Raven Row Gallery. Details to follow shortly when I can find their address. Basically, Stephen Willetts has an exhibition at Raven Row Gallery at the moment, and today I thought I'd play some sections from Audio Arts Supplement Stephen Willetts Inside the Night, recordings from London's alternative club scene, which was issued on cassette as Audio Arts Magazine. Volume 6, trying to extract the cardboard sleeve from the cassette case. Yes, published parallel to Audio Arts Magazine, Volume 6, Numbers 2 and 3. See accompanying booklet for details, 1983. Stephen Willetts, in fact, did a couple of cassettes for Audio Arts. The other one was Extending the Meaning in Art, A Basis for Operation. That was Audio Arts Magazine, Volume 3, Number 1. And I thought the exhibition is at Raven Row, Artillery Passage, I think it is, or Artillery Lane. The catalogue is extremely... Ah, yes. Raven Row, 56 Artillery Lane, London E1, 7LS. And I believe the show runs from something like Wednesday to Sunday. And it is a very specific show in that it is Control, Stephen Willetts, work 1962 to 69. When he was making sort of various, what should we call them, constructions and pieces which involved the interaction of the viewer and observer, and they had originally been inspired to some extent by an artist called Agam and others. And just to read out a passage from the catalogue, there's an amazing catalogue which looks like it should be about £20, but in fact they're giving it away for nothing. You go to the gallery and there's this pile of catalogues, and I picked one up and they said, well, you can take one, which was extraordinary. And Willetts also produced a magazine called Control, and I'll read out a chunk from the catalogue related, which is an interview with Stephen Willetts, before I start with the Inside the Night recordings. Robbie, did you want to wait just to see how the cassette runs, or you're kind of... Should we give it a test? Perhaps we should just test it now, and then we can sort of... let's play. Play. This is... Yeah. Do we have sound? Sounds like we do. Is that okay? Fine. Thank you. Not sure what that means. Okay, so that will be from Inside the Night, which we will continue with shortly. In the meantime, this is an extract from the catalogue. Issue number one in itself was a manifestation of this new kind of work. As such, it had a function. And the function was to propose and introduce people to the new functionalities of art practice and to propose a territory. And Control number one, we printed 500 of those and distributed them as best we could, mainly in London, in different bookshops, especially Better Books on Charing Cross Road. And the other activity we did was developing multiple clothing. For that, there were three things. We did the helmet, the dress, which is the most advanced, really, and the other thing that did sell was a bag. The bag was about the idea of a practical thing. It was a clear, transparent, thick plastic bag with edging. The idea was that everybody could see what you had inside. As part of multiple clothing were also these vacuum-formed helmets. Vacuum forming was very new then. We were trying to get multiple clothing beyond London. And there was a boutique, I think, in Leicester. So we went all the way to Leicester and got them to take multiple clothing. This is quite extraordinary because I come from Leicester and I'm racking my brains trying to think which boutique that could possibly have been. And the only one I can come up with was a boutique called U Boutique, which by coincidence happened to be on East Street, right next to my father's shop at the time, which was called Jack English, the Lighting Centre. It is conceivable that that was the very boutique where Stephen Willets tried to place his multiple clothing. But maybe we'll find out later, because I have asked if Stephen Willets is welcome to come on the show perhaps next week and talk a bit more about that. So these helmets, they had a visor which you could insert different coloured acetate sections into that would cause you to see things in different ways, and the helmet had a lamp on the top that would light up the path in front of you. The idea was that it would change the way people related to you and the way that you would relate to them. So the idea behind multiple clothing was, in wearing the piece or taking a bag or putting a helmet on or whatever, you became the work. That was the work. It was like an event that you put on. The idea was that you walked into the infrastructure of society. It wasn't that you were putting it on in your own room. It was to engage with other people when you walked out in the street. Anyway, this goes on. This is all in this Amazing Value catalogue. It's Amazing Value because they're giving it away for nothing. That's at the Raven Row Gallery, Stephen Willets. He has numerous pieces on show there, many of which look like they haven't been seen since the early 60s. Some of which, it has to be said, aren't working, but that's understandable. They're quite complicated structures, and I think perhaps only some of them have been restored. Well worth a visit. Okay, we'll plug on with the audio art supplement Inside the Night, recordings from London's alternative club scene, which Willets produced and issued in 1983.
Everyone's just going around living their dull lives, living in dull houses, and they're not being themselves. Well, I don't know, perhaps they are. Perhaps most people are generally dull and boring. But, you know, you look out the window and you see these row upon row of houses and they all look the same. And the people come out in the mornings and they all look the same. And they all go to work and they all sit there behind their desks and their offices that all look the same. There's no, you don't seem to get any individuality at all with the everyday life. It's just dead. I like people that are gonna express themselves, do what they want.
Working in department stores and shops, and the girls have always sort of thought me a bit unusual, and then they start laughing at me, and also being gay, I have to keep it quiet, and I get a lot of pressure there, and they start criticising me, and they just treat me as a joke in the end, and I just go very quiet at work. I just can't cope.
They hate me. They just hate me. They hate my guts. They hate my dog. They hate everything about me. They hate my friends. They think I'm a whore because there's always sort of young boys leaving in the morning because people come around and see me, you know.
And end up staying.
Yeah, so they just think I'm some kind of big whore. And they blame everything on the dog because it's just like a scapegoat for them, really. They just hate me. The kids throw stones at me. The council feel sorry for me. They think I'm a poor harassed housewife, so they're really good. They get the police in and everything.
We should make a film of you.
Oh, it's fab! The council, I went to see the councilman, I was just doing my nervous breakdown trip, and they called the police in and they say about the fucking kids. They're bastards, they're real bastards. They stole the bicycle pump off my bike and then let all the fucking tyres down. So it immobilised me.
So you're like the mad woman of the estate?
Yeah, they just think I'm crazy. But the thing is, they don't think I'm crazy and leave me alone, they just get on my nerves.
But I hate being out in the daytime in the winter, it's just awful. I just want to stay in bed, indoors, and then, of course it's really weird living in a basement, because it's dark in there, and often just don't bother to go out. And then just go out in the evenings. Yeah, I tend to sort of always stay up till about 4 in the morning, 3 or 4 in the morning. I never go to bed before 3. Because there's no point. Because I never want to get up. The only time I get up early is if it's sunny. I want to go to suntan. That's the only reason.
Some people, the younger ones, can't get jobs because it's really difficult for school leavers, but some of the older ones, I think it's because they are very individual type of personalities. They can't fit into the 9-to-5 routine. They find it very difficult to do that. And they're constantly looking around for a job that they really want to do, a job they can express their personalities in, but of course it's very hard to find, and they tend to drift on and not bother getting a job. I know several people like that.
I was working at a shop in Kensington, and I was just doing all the clients that nobody else wanted to do. Although I'd only done 2 years training, I was like doing all the colour work that nobody else could be bothered to do and things like that. And I just thought, well, what's the point? And they were really using me as well, because it was a new sort of trendy shop and they'd have lots of photographers in, and like they'd sort of send me up the stairs to be nice to the photographers and things. And I just thought, well, I'm just being used as a puppet for this place. So I thought, I'll branch out and do something else. It's a definite rejection of the way society has forced you to be. It's a matter of saying, I will not do what you tell me. I may do it for 7 hours a day, said, but you cannot control me. It's not just a rejection, it's a statement against, a protest against the fact that society is so rigid that anyone who's slightly different, be it in mind or thinking, is immediately sort of labelled and boxed and filed away and tried to put away somewhere. You get stopped by the police and you don't get served in pubs and you are ostracised by everyone. And after a while, that just the being ostracised for one is addictive. You enjoy it, you revel in it, because it means that society is so scared of you that they do not wish you to have you in their company, which shows how narrow-minded most people are, the fact that they cannot cope with anything slightly different, in the same way that a mother will try and reject a baby that is born disabled. They don't want it, they don't want to say that's come from us. So they try and lock it away and stick it in a home. And what you're doing is bringing it onto the streets and saying, look, bad luck, you can't stop me. You can hit me over the head with a bottle, but you can't stop me, and I'm allowed to go where I want to. So it's a definite poke in the side, needling pain in Joe Public's little cosy world.
Everyday David Bowie that no one sees, you know. The one that goes to the laundrette and goes down for the tea bags and things, but also...
Well, so you're a woman.
Very specific, yeah, I'm female, so if I get taken for a guy, or even in the very extreme cases, very occasionally, I have been taken for David Bowie, but, you know, sort of sprinkled around over the last 6 years, it's... certainly a desire not to be anonymous, but in a very extreme way, because I've taken a very specific Bowie character, which was probably the most extreme character, and that was the man who fell to earth.
It comes from inside you and not from sort of things happening around you. I mean, you just turn a blind eye to that now. I mean, I walk down the street and don't see anyone. I mean, you don't notice people looking at you or staring, screaming at you, because you just walk around with your head in the cloud. But you get so bored with it all. You know, people. People are very narrow-minded.
I've become so used to people's attitudes of being, mixing with, like, gay people all the time, and then all being with people like Scarlett, and just all people that are completely open-minded. You forget all about the narrow-minded people that really exist. And that's the whole thing that I got into, just forget about that whole straight world.
I can't say I feel freer in myself for liking the horror. I just love the effect it has on people. When I go out with all my grey and white makeup on, I do it very skull-like, and I love it. And people generally, especially girls, they hate it, because you're not supposed to do makeup like that. You're supposed to use makeup to enhance yourself. But why? I mean, I like going out looking like a skull. I love skulls. So I love sort of having very deep-set eyes and grey face and grey skin, looking like death warmed up. I mean, that appeals to me. It's part of me, therefore I'm going to do it.
Well, I like wearing makeup because it's... Well, I like the hour or so before getting ready and putting it on, and like an artist draws a picture, I like to paint my face. You know, it's... I like to see how different I can look with makeup on. I mean, some days I put it on and it looks really awful, but I like it, so I wear it. Other days I like to take an hour, 2 hours, really being prissy and getting all the nice little details and really transforming myself into something else.
I think it's the type of escapism again,
yeah.
You know, especially from ordinary jobs, or even if they're on the dole doing nothing during the day, and then they look forward to going out to a club and dressing up, and it's just a whole different world. You find a lot of people on the dole really look good. I mean, they've bought their clothes for next to nothing, but they put them together in an individual way, and you'd never imagine they were on the dole. They look really good.
Everything we like, sort of black, bright things, don't really come into our lives. Like, we're all into different aspects of black. There's definitely the sexual and sort of gothic horror side of black, which we all like. But there's also the sort of I suppose sleazy side is the same sort of thing, really. It's night time when we come in from work and you've been sitting around in the daylight all day, and the night's just sort of a cover. We are very night people, really, although we have to go out and put up with everyone during the day. But black just is us. You can use it as a cover, you can use it as whatever you want. People have always been afraid of the dark. And I think people have always been afraid of the dark because it's representative of everything taboo. You know, everything taboo always goes on in the dark, or in dark rooms, or behind closed doors. And I prefer that side of life to sort of the everyday routine, run-of-the-mill, sit-at-a-desk type thing. I feel more myself. I mean, during the day, you've got... Everything's artificial. You know, everyone's just going around, living their lives how everyone expects them to be. And during the night, sort of, a different side of you comes out. You can be yourself. You can use the night as a cloak. You know, you can sort of hide away in corners or use it as just a background, which is what we do basically. With everything being so black around us, then the night's sort of our ideal time. I mean, it must be great being a vampire.
And I was like a total night person. I used to sleep. In the winter, I just sleep all day, and then I'm up all night. And in the winter, I never see daylight. In the summer, I never see night time. Because I go to work about 9 o'clock when it's, you know, still light.
Mm.
By the time I leave, it's, you know, 4 o'clock morning, it's sunny again. It's really weird. That total, there's so many people that live like that though. You'd be surprised, go to clubs every night. They must work in the evening, early evening, and they just sleep all day.
Whatever,
yes, it is. But in a way, that's part of the enjoyment of the night sometimes. Because if it wasn't, let's say, I don't know, there's something about going out at night and you get all dressed up, you get all keyed up, and it's actually going there, and that's often the best bit. It's when you get there that you find you're sitting down on a table, listening to loud music you don't want to, with overcrowd of his people.
You can dress differently at night time. You can be more, you're not so exposed as you are in the daytime because you haven't got the light.
Mm.
It's just the thing of electric light is much more flattering, it's much more mysterious, and it's just more fun being out at night. And daytime, I just feel everyone looks really ugly and like really bad skin and tired, and at night time they don't. It's like being in a movie at night time, isn't it? If you think about it. Whereas, because it's all artificial lighting, whereas in the daytime it's reality.
Oh, well, that seems to be the end of side one of the cassette. Indeed. So I shall turn it over. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And that was a cassette recording issued by Stephen Willetts in 1983 called Inside the Night, Recordings from London's Alternative Club Scene, as Audio Arts Supplement, Volume 6, Numbers 2 and 3, 1983. And Willetts, as I said earlier, Stephen Willetts has a show on at the moment at Raven Row, which is 56 Artillery Lane, which is in Spitalfields, E17LS. And if you do go to the show, which is recommended, it's a very interesting show, and do pick up the catalogue, which is, don't be put off by the fact that it looks like it should be £20. They are free. You can just go in and pick one up off the table, and it's worth the visit just for that. Okay, well, I think I'll turn the cassette over, and we might as well play the other side of Stephen Willetts Inside the Night. Cassettes are great, aren't they? Right. Side two.
I just approached the manager and asked him if I could start a club, and I told him that I knew a lot of people on the club scene, and that probably if I started a club and said the type of music that would be played, that they would come along. And he said he'd give it a try, because obviously he was just taking my word for it. So we tried it out and it worked, and it just continued from there. We love dressing up, but when it comes down, we're not posers as such, as they are posers. Our minds think the way we dress, anyway, if you see what I mean. We decided to do this club because we were sick of everyone sitting around posing on corners with clothes, so we thought, right, we're going to have a club and we're going to put any record on that people would like.
We're also sick of very boring pop synthesizer music.
And we wanted to mix all different music. We wanted people to enjoy themselves, to get up and actually dance.
We also wanted a variety of music
on the table,
not
which
the same droning, you know, electro pop that all the clubs graduated onto. We wanted to mix the sounds and have everything from the 50s through to what there is now.
And also the kids that were just on the dole, but I mean they're all quite happy and they just needed, there was just no other club for them to go to. So the basic thing was it wasn't commercial, it was run by the people like Scarlett and I and Chris, but the people that were friends of theirs. That's the only club like that. It's run by people they know. The drink's cheap. It's sleazy. It's not pretentious. And it's just a place to get, well, basically, it's a place to get pissed and dance and have a good time. And see, people say, oh, you know, you actually have to dress up. When you don't, you can go along in a pair of jeans and a ripped shirt. And that's just, it's the attitude of people that we let them in by, not the way they dress, you know. People come down in Anthony Price suits and then other people come down in ripped jeans. It's like just their attitude that's the important thing. I mean, it was only really tacky, but it was actually doing something. And some of my friends moan about how boring London is. They never actually do anything about it. That's what gets me. They go, oh, it's so boring, there's nowhere to go, there's nothing to do. But then anyone that starts doing things, just rip them to shreds and say, oh, it's ripped, you know, that's pathetic. Or because that club is stamped with our personality. I mean, we're the ones that decided how it's decorated, who'd work there. And basically the kernel people that came, the, you know, the original core, are still there and they're basically our friends. So it is our club, to that extent. And it is created, but the people that go there create it as well.
I mean, there was just bodies laying around everywhere where everyone had just had far too much to drink. But I mean, you just didn't have to worry about sort of, as long as you didn't sort of get on people's nerves, break things, whatever, as long as you sort of behaved yourself, it just didn't matter how out of it you were. And everyone just used to be really drunk, or if they weren't, that, I mean, they always used to be on a sort of natural high because it was such a friendly place.
It was such a friendly place. I mean, there was all these punks and there was me in a leopard print dress and fishnets. Loads of makeup on, a little hat, and I got really drunk, and in the end I'd end up taking my dress off and jumping around, dancing around with just fishnets on, and nobody batted an eyelid. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I was there, I was one of them, you know, but I mean, a lot of places, that, oh, well, I mean, it's not on.
Yeah.
Man in a dress and taking it off, well.
Really good. The first 6 months it was just full of like all our friends, the club just about made enough money to cover its costs. We used to all get drunk, totally drunk, and every night it was just like a party, and it was just total chaos, you know. The first 6 weeks we didn't even have a DJ, we had tapes, cassettes, and they'd like everyone would be dancing and suddenly the tape would stop. It was brilliant in those days.
Of the people there who did robotic type of dancing, they would have to be dressed in an appropriate way to do that type of dance. It's a sort of cold image, again like a model, I suppose, a sort of distant, aloof image. That's the ideal thing, and that went along with the dancing and the records. I think it's just purely for the image, the glamour, the whole look. If you do your makeup in a specific way or dress up, it looks better if you're, shall we say, posed. I know it's an overused word, but that's the appropriate thing, I think. Because if they just dressed up, did their makeup in a specific way, and then just went out and messed around and didn't look as if they cared about themselves once they went out, then the whole image wouldn't go together.
Yeah.
You see, so it's a whole carry through from when they get ready and then they go to the club, and the whole thing carries on there.
I couldn't care if someone's a hippie.
Mm.
I mean, I let hippies into that club. If they're okay, if they've got the right attitude to have fun, then that's okay. It doesn't really matter what they're wearing. And then I've turned away people that have obviously been out and bought a new outfit the day before. I mean, it's not because of what they look like, because you can see through people.
Mm.
You can see if people are all right or not.
Mm.
And I mean, I've always been able to see through people anyway, but I'm getting really, really good at it now because of the club.
There's gays and there's gays. I mean, me and Nandy, we was always, you know, they didn't want to know us. And so we got hostility, both from the gays and both from straight people, too. Mm-hmm. So that's two places. And then, like, the New Romantic came, and I suppose that was an excuse, and they sort of accepted us. Then that went terribly commercialised. And it just got very boring, to be truthful. So we thought, right, we'll get our own disco together. And it would have done well if the club hadn't shut down, because people did enjoy it, because we said, look, we don't care here. If you want to live out your fantasies, like, I love camp music. I am camp. I'm the biggest camp person going around. Mm. Like, I love Marilyn Monroe, Judy Garland. And what we wanted to do is, you know, if we wanted to dance, not just the ordinary, like, everyone dances the same. Mm. If we wanted to let loose, then let loose. Don't worry about posing. Just let loose.
You just didn't recognise me, because I just looked like the chic woman.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realised it was me, you know, the same guy the night before that was wearing jeans and t-shirt.
Mm.
And that really freaked them, because they always expected people to be, like, you know, men, or, you know, screaming drag queens. And they couldn't cope with someone that could do both. Yeah, that's why I did it, and do it just as well, and not do it for any sexual reason. Just do it to throw everyone completely, and for a laugh.
You see the faces.
Hmm.
You know, you're drawn to the faces. You've got all the black walls, and you've got the lights. Dim lights, and you can see people's faces. You can see people as they are, and not just a white face and a bland suit, you know, or whatever. You're actually drawn to the features, their eyes, the nose, the mouth, because the surrounding is so dark and black and boring. You know, you have to look at the people, which is how it should be. You don't want to go down a club and look at the wallpaper. I mean, there's no point. You know, you're there to look at people, talk to people, be with people. I mean, anyone can sit in a room with nice wallpaper on. Basically, they were hassled. The rest of society hassled them, you know, they didn't like them, they laughed at them, they thought they were silly. Why do that to your hair? Why wear silly makeup? Why wear silly clothes? And they just weren't put at ease at any time. And of course, when they came there, among other people who were hassled and picked upon and got at, well, then of course you immediately feel at ease, because no one's going to pick on anybody.
Right.
Because they're usually the ones who are being picked on.
What I'd like most would be for people to go there and for everybody to be able to talk to absolutely everybody else, without having to sort of worry about, oh, I don't know them, I don't know them, because that's what it used to be like. Mm. I mean, everybody spoke to everyone. I mean, I made so many new friends. I mean, proper sort of friends, not just people that are kind of trying to use you, but proper friends, through doing that club.
Mm.
Because you could just go up to anyone and talk to them. And if people have got the right attitude, that, like, you know, you can go around and have a laugh. Yeah.
like to see is a rebellion against the fashion and what they give in the magazines and in pop music. I'd like to see them turn against that and say, 1 week, we're not having any more of this. I'm sick of this. I don't want to see any more.
Because
it's my
deluding
mind filled
young
up
people
with it.
Into thinking, you especially know, the unemployed young
like
people.
Like television, buy your video now, buy this. They always show houses with these housewives going around in these
yeah, but
lovely
it's
houses.
Not that. It's not just that, it's things like Riverside, that
oh,
ghastly
God,
programme
God.
Where this these clapped out TV people try and tell youngsters that they that it's all very accessible, that they that this is happening. It's street, you know. This is happening
yes.
all the time.
But they put
you're
it over.
You're part of it, and you know. And it's as if anyone can be famous.
Yes,
and I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second.
Play. It was like a big play, like being on a stage all the time, and I know that loads of people accused, you know, the in crowd to be all posers, just a bunch of posers. But who wouldn't be a poser? Who wouldn't really like to be in the spotlight for a quarter of an hour and just say, you know, who I am and what I really want to do and this and that? It was like really putting everything you are and everything you like just sort of in a certain light so everyone could have seen what you were and what you liked.
That certain feeling carved by another's hand.
Well, it's a matter of trying to live
as
a community
you want,
within
yeah.
a community. Definitely, it's a definite subculture. It's not very large, and everyone helps everybody else. It's a matter of immediate identification and belonging. It's a sort of where it's a club that is on the street all the time. In other words, you are a permanent member of that club because you look a certain way. So that people will always help you out, and you tend to live round people in various spheres. You exist together very much, especially our little community. In the flat, we lived with each other very in everything. Sort of more than a family does, far more of a family than your average nuclear family is. In the same way with all of us.
Well, sometimes I wish I could be shielded from it all and just close my eyes and go along in a nice narrow path and keep it all out, but I mean, you have to cross over the boundary, unfortunately. But overnight, well, then that is my capsule. I get into it, I cut off the day. You know, they can do what they want, and I'll do what they want me to do in the day. But overnight, I climb into my little wherever I'm going to, my little capsule, and shut it all out. I'm with the people I want to be.
You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and they were just two sides of one cassette, a cassette issued in 1983 by Stephen Willetts, Inside the Night, recordings from London's alternative club scene. And Willetts also issued another cassette in this series, Audio Arts, and that one was called Extending the Meaning in Art, A Basis for Operation, which is a sort of, I suppose, a more kind of didactic kind of recording. And we might play some of that next week. We might even get Stephen Willetts into the studio. He has been invited. And he is presently showing at Raven Row Gallery, 56 Artillery Lane, London E1 7LS, which is in Spitalfields, London Spitalfields. The show is called Control, Stephen Willetts' work 1962 to 1969. Okay, other shows which are on in London at the moment. There's an interesting photography show at the Photographer's Gallery, which includes photographs by David Lynch, the factory photographs, Taking Shots, the photography of William S. Burroughs, and Andy Warhol photographs, 1976 to 1987. And so that's on at the Photographer's Gallery. And if you go on a Monday, it's free. So get along on a Monday. You don't have to pay the £4. David Lynch, he says, I love industry pipes. I love fluid and smoke. I love man-made things. I like to see people hard at work, and I like to see sludge and man-made waste. That's David Lynch, the factory photographs. Burroughs said, I drifted along taking shots when I could score. I ended up hooked. William S. Burroughs from Junkie, and Andy Warhol photographs. I told them I didn't believe in art, that I believed in photography. Well, we can go ahead with a... In fact, David Lynch issued a CD last year, 2013, The Big Dream, and seems to be an opportune moment to play a track from that.
Love is the name in the wind. The wind blows through.
parties, who were waiters of them drunkards, who were bartenders, some cab drivers. They always lose their job sooner or later because the day comes when they don't have junk, when they don't make connections, and they don't go to work. How does a junkie feel towards other junkies? Well, the relations between junkies are usually very bad indeed. They all hate each other as a rule, and they're very sort of venomous towards each other, like queens. They're always talking about, that one. He left me sick, or he beat me, or this or that. Well, they always have complaints about each other. Well, you say the relations between junkies are very similar to the relations of scarcity. Wherever there is scarcity, wherever there is not enough to go around, there is always sure to be a very bad feeling. So I've noticed this in Spanish families where people are very poor, that the brothers all absolutely hate each other because every extra person there that eats is taking food right out of the mouths of the other. Well, that's sort of the relation between junkies. Although they can't do without each other for scoring. But remember that a junkie has really no social relations. That is, he has no interest in other people except insofar as they contribute to his supply. That is, if he has junk, he's quite content to be alone. Junkies have no interest in sex, and they have no interest in other people except as suppliers of junk. None whatever.
Yes, the inimitable voice of William S. Burroughs. That's by way of mentioning that there's an exhibition of photographs taking shots, the photography of William S. Burroughs, also David Lynch, the factory photographs, and Andy Warhol photographs, all on at the Photographer's Gallery, which, looking through the leaflet, seems to be open 7 days a week. Yes, it's open 7 days a week. Tickets are £4, but it's free on Mondays. So photographs by those three there. Before that, we heard David Lynch from his last year's CD, The Big Dream. And so you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. Next week, we might conceivably have Stephen Willetts on the programme to talk about some aspect of the exhibition presently at Raven Row. But I'm going to play out with the Chambers Brothers, The Time Has Come.
psychedelicide.